Pre-Loved Radio, a podcast sharing inspirational stories about pre-loved fashion.
Welcome back to Pre-Loved Radio. This is the final episode in our three-part series on women, fashion, and consumerism. And today, we're talking about why we keep outsourcing our personal style to fast fashion instead of focusing on what we already own. We discuss habituation and how it relates to our wardrobes, the constant pursuit of newness, and the importance of taking time to find and love our personal style. We also touch on the concept of a wardrobe freeze and how creative ownership can lead us to cherish and wear our clothes more. But before we dive into today's episode, I want to give you a quick heads up that we experienced a few audio issues in some parts of this episode. So while the sound quality isn't perfect at times, we promise that the content is exceptional and well worth a listen. This one's a two-part question. First of all, why are we so obsessed with the pursuit of the new? And then following on from that, how does that drive our reliance on fast fashion?
I mean, there's a shame in aging, isn't there? We're constantly aging. We're a problem that needs to be solved. We don't want to have our natural hair colour because it always looks more dull. We don't want our skin to sag because it means that we're aging. It means that we're no longer the newest thing. I mean, even you look at the quarter life crisis that people have at 25, probably about to hit that one myself, is that we are no longer the new people. We're no longer the fresh 18-year-olds that were cool and knew what's going on and with the trends. I think that we're constantly being sold the narrative in a society, especially as women. I mean, obviously it can apply to all genders and people and everyone, that at some point we're shiny and new. And there comes a point where we stop being shiny and new. So we're basically paying catch up for the rest of our lives. And we can find that in a form of clothing. We can find that in a new house, a new car, a new bag, a new this, a new that, because we're constantly have some sort of expiry date on ourselves. And I feel like a big commentary on that is watching how we're seeing younger girls especially start to look older when they're teenagers and immediately start to be told that they need hardcore skincare at the age of 16. And I mean, we saw the whole Sephora tweens trend that came up earlier in the year. Can we talk about the fact that 9-year-olds are going into makeup stores and buying hardcore skincare because they are apparently aging? They are fresh out the womb. They're children. I mean, I still feel like a child myself. And like, I even see targeted ads towards me being like, yes, you are aging. I'm like, what do you mean? I just became an adult. I'm 23. And we're constantly being sold this narrative that we are actually expiring. So we need to fill that void with new clothes and make ourselves look new again and give ourselves Botox and fresh hair and fresh this and fresh that, because there's this need to be shiny and new. Otherwise, we're just old and aging.
We're conditioned that old is bad. Old is used. Old is not fun. It's not fresh. Like, it's all marketing to us, but old is actually amazing. Getting older is amazing. And it is a privilege. And I learned that from a young age, because the first few funerals I went to in my 20s were for people who were around the same age as me. And so going to a funeral for someone who has actually gotten to live to an older age in their 80s was like really moving. And then, so I've always just been conscious of like our approach to life, because our time is limited. The way the world works, like, we're conditioned to be distracted, that like we aren't enough, we don't have enough. If we just get this thing, like, we'll feel better. And if we have a new outfit each week, and it just feeds like the dopamine receptors. Whereas it's a real skill to sort of sit with and not reaching for external validation through purchasing things or, yeah, you're like the environment that you're in, sort of trying to change it up and fill it with like new items that are meant to make you feel better.
What about habituation? How does this concept apply to our wardrobes and influence our consumption habits?
So
So habituation is the concept that the more we see something, the less it fills us. And this is actually something that Lauren Bravo talks about in her book, How to Break Up with Fast Fashion. And it's really talking to the concept that the more we see something, the less we are thrilled by it, the less we find there's novelty there, the less we're drawn to it. And it doesn't matter if we have worn that piece once, twice, or never. It's just the fact that we're seeing it every day when we go into our wardrobe, so we're not drawn to potentially putting it on or wearing it.
This is super relatable, and I'm definitely guilty of that.
Yeah, I mean, we all are. I've got pieces hanging in my wardrobe even now that I look at and I think, nah, boring, but it's still a really important element of an outfit, and it's just that by seeing it every day, it just doesn't bring us interest, and that's really based on our lizard brains, our survival brains that need to keep searching for the new, the things that kept us alive in the dawn of humanity is the thing that almost destroying humanity now is that constant search for the new.
The novelty was something that sprung to mind for me, but it's almost as if like things being habitual can be criticized for being unconscious. And the reason that we create habits is so that we reduce our cognitive load. But I wonder if you brought intentionality to habits and you built the relationship with pieces of clothing that you had in your closet, whether that would change the boredom and the desire for the new that happens when you're looking at those pieces again.
I absolutely agree. That's kind of what I was mentioning. It's like now that I look at my wardrobe, having only had these items in it for however long, I now know how each piece is able to be worn. And so the pieces in my wardrobe don't bore me and I don't feel annoyed by them because I'm like, you are a really key piece and a great tool in this outfit, this outfit, this outfit, this outfit. Like I know how they work and I know how they work on my body and the work that they do in my wardrobe. So, you know, for me, you're absolutely right. I have that relationship with the pieces and they give me joy.
And they have a relationship with each other.
Yes.
So what I hear you describe is there's an ecosystem in the wardrobe and you can bring the novelty yourself. You don't have to go outside that wardrobe to find the novelty. You bring it through the creativity that you have with what you're working with and your relationship to those things.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with personal style because, Hazel, I know you've taken the time to really cultivate your own personal style. We know that it takes time, but we just don't do that. We're not used to taking the time to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's interesting because I've only given myself the time to do this because of how much I've learned about the impact that fast fashion and kind of untethered consumption has, you know, on the planet, on the humans that make the clothing and all of those things. And so it was those humanitarian and environmental aspects that really drove me to give myself the time. And before then, not that I didn't care, but I didn't even know that I needed the time to figure out my own personal style. I thought that the things that I was drawn to buying in the off shops or if it was retail, I was drawn to them because I knew what my personal style was. Turns out I had no idea. And I was consuming things in a really unethical way, even though I was like, oh, why am I in secondhand? I only buy and share when I have to. This, that, and the other, giving myself all of these different excuses as to why I was still consuming in that way, even with the knowledge of the impact that it had on us. And it wasn't until I just decided to stop buying, that I had this huge revelation about my personal style, about the way that I was consuming clothing and fashion. And it's about really the ways, the tools that we need to not do that. Like, I wouldn't have had the gifts of all of those things without first starting.
I know we've touched on it briefly in the previous two episodes in this series, but your wardrobe freeze, can you explain the concept behind it and how it can help us break free from that cycle of constant consumption?
Yeah, absolutely. So a wardrobe freeze, very simply, is the commitment to yourself to not bring any new clothes
spoiler, there's two different options, right? So you can either choose to not bring any new clothes into your wardrobe, or you can choose, which is what I've done, to bring no new or secondhand, so new to me clothes. The first is really great for your environmental impact, and it's a really great option if shopping is something that you still want to do, you just want to do it a bit more mindfully and a bit more thoughtfully. Vinted have just put out a campaign where they have these videos of these people with, it says, imagine if you could see your consumption. And so there's like women walking down the street with six pairs of sunglasses on their head. So like they're on the treadmill, they've got like 100 pairs of shoes falling off the treadmill because they've got so many at home. Like, I'd absolutely love that campaign. It's so great. But what I think is really beneficial about not bringing anything at all into your wardrobe is it really gives you space to examine that consumption from a completely different space. Like, I have given myself the space to examine my wardrobe of why not bringing anything into it feels completely different.
Hazel, it's such a good point, and I was thinking about it this morning, that to reorganize a pattern or create change, you do need a lot of space. And one of the things I made a note on from my personal experience of doing the 33 pieces for 3 months was that my whole system felt more relaxed at having less
and less
choices.
It's the overwhelm. The overwhelm just disappears. But I still have maybe 120 pieces of clothing I own, but I have no overwhelm because, like I said before, each and every piece of clothing now plays a part and works hard in my wardrobe. And I don't feel guilty about having them because I'm wearing them. And I don't feel ashamed about having them because I'm really getting the use that I need to and that we should all be getting out of our clothes, out of each garment.
And there's a deep sort of sense of, and I made a lot of notes about relationship because it is this idea that when we're relating with things and people and places, there's a connection and a love and a desire to care for that thing that grows. And that there's almost disconnection, isolation, anxiety. They're all big issues in mental health in the world. And there's this sense that we are forgetting to build relationships even with things like what we own as a way of feeling that we are nurturing and caring for and connected.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And it's like the process of, say, mending something gives you that with that relationship or with that piece of clothing.
And there's a relating with that it's almost, it's an investment. And in that investing of time, whether you're mending a piece of clothing or you're planting something in the ground, there's a reciprocity almost that happens.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly nurturing and satisfying to have those relationships.
So what practical steps can we take to start buying only what we need and truly loving what we already have?
Biggest thing is figure out what you like. And not, I mean, what you like as in what you've been told you're supposed to like or what some color analysis person has told you what colors best go with your skin or whether you're a skirts girl or dresses girl because someone else has told you. I mean, genuinely, what do you like? What motivates you? What are you stoked about? What if you had 2 minutes left in your wardrobe would be the first things you would grab? And why? Figure out what that is and what you want deep down and then move accordingly. For me, about 6 months ago, I realized I didn't like most of the things in my wardrobe and that most of it had just been the idea of it had been sold to me in that I'm a teacher, I need to wear teacher dresses now. Oh, I'm young, so I need to be wearing crop tops. I don't like crop tops. I don't like them. I don't like the way they sit on me. I don't feel comfortable. So I'm going to donate all of them. I moved them out and I went, okay, these dresses that I'm supposed to wear because that's my role as a teacher now. I went, okay, do I actually like these ones or do I want to wear something different? And I did a big cull of everything I didn't actually like and instead went, okay, so if I've been sold all of this and sold all these ideas that I'm supposed to like this or I'm supposed to dress this way because of my age, my job, or what colors are supposed to suit me, then what have I got left after all of that? And I had a few pieces that I really liked. And then I started going, okay, what do I already have that's similar to that? And I had a few skirts and things. And I went, okay, well, I don't like the top that goes with this skirt, so I'm going to get rid of that top, going to keep the skirt. And I found within my wardrobe already there were so many pieces that went together that the future consuming I had was actually just things that brought me joy. And that's where I started making my own little Pinterest shopping list of things that if I went to the op shop, if I went to a store and I found this and it was actually something I'm genuinely wanting to buy, I'm okay with purchasing these items because I'm motivated by what I really like. It's not because it's trendy. I turned off the trends to myself and went, I just want this because I actually like it. I like the way that this beautiful big full skirt feels. And if I happen to see one at a price that I'm okay with paying and a place that I don't mind supporting, not a fast fashion house, an ethical brand or an op shop, yes, okay, I will spend my money on that. But I'm not just going to go and just buy things for the sake of it unless it fits on that little Pinterest board of that menu that I've got. I mean, Pinterest is the best thing. I have a menu. We talked about this last time. I have the menu of clothes I already have and ways to style them based on what the Pinterest girlies have done because they are awesome. They do half the work for me. I have a op shop wish list, I call it, where it's items that if I happen to have seen them, they're items that like, these are the dream, the holy grails. If I happen to see a Fendi baguette that's all like beaded and bedazzled, which is one that I've loved since watching Sex and the City. If I happen to see that, that's on my wish list. And that has stayed on the wish list for over 6 months. And I'm not motivated by, oh, I have to have it. It's like, oh, well, if that came up and for a price that I felt agreeable to, I wouldn't mind purchasing. And then, yeah, it goes off there. So I try and only buy things that are from that wish list or basic items that, you know, if it fits within that sphere, okay, I don't feel any guilt. I don't feel like I'm over consuming. I feel like I'm consuming at a much slower and sustainable rate.
I think it is getting comfortable with repeating looks and or like putting pieces like together that you like and how you feel in them. I always remember on Clueless when Cher would didn't like mirrors, so she'd take Polaroids of outfits. But you could take photos of outfits that you like, just like to jog your memory and have a little folder in your phone. These are the things that I like to wear that make me feel good. I'd say you can swap clothes with your friends. I love doing that. It's like going to someone else's wardrobe, hiding your wardrobe as well is really, but going to someone else's wardrobe is new. Air quotes. And hiding things out of sight in your wardrobe. If you put something away, you're like, oh, I forgot about that. Like, you don't need everything out at once. It's seasonal too. You can't wear it all year round.
So for me, having frozen my wardrobe now for almost a year, I am completely obsessed with it. Like, I have fallen deeply in love with freezing my wardrobe, so I'm going to do it forever. Like, probably I won't do it forever. I'll invite a few new things or new to me items into my wardrobe eventually. But it's given me such clarity. And I think that when people are buying more and more things, it's because they're searching for clarity. They are searching for the holy grail of retail item that's going to bring them this key that unlocks everything in their wardrobe and makes every single outfit work and makes getting dressed in the morning easy. That's not where the key lies. The key lies in understanding what you like to wear, how you like to wear your clothes, the way you want your clothes to feel on your body. And, you know, then all the kind of stylistic things, the colors you like to wear, the fabrics, all of those items can come into play. But without slowing down and actually giving yourself the time and space to figure out answers to those things, you know, the concept of buying what you love and keeping what you have doesn't mean anything because you'll keep on buying looking for that holy grail, that chi, which isn't there. It's in you.
I so agree, Hazel. We know that we're like Chrissy has said, we're being primed. We're constantly being primed and encouraged and spammed to purchase and to have not enough time to learn to mend our clothes or wonder about how clothes make us feel. And we don't have that space. So I agree, slowing down, and Jacinta said it as well, is just the first step.
Yes.
It always comes down to slowing down and noticing. Noticing is such an underrated and yet powerful tool for everything. For me, the steps are to slow down, to notice the body, and it's starting to build. We have emotional language literacy. It's starting to build literacy with sensation in the body.
So maybe a year ago, I would have looked at something that I wasn't wearing or that didn't have often in my wardrobe or that, you know, was broken or whatever it is. And now I see that piece as a resource and I'm like, how else can I wear this? How else can I make this garment work for me in a way that I need it to, because I don't have the option to get something new? So like you're saying about that relationship, that longing for novelty is I'm now actually flipping the script on my wardrobe and I'm like, oh, I can change you to fit into what I want.
You've got space and you've also got a wonderful container, the frozen wardrobe, for creativity. So within the limitation of the container, it's like seeing the container differently, not as a limit, but as this wonderful pot of alchemy where you can learn to be resourceful with what you have.
And I think I shared this story on my Instagram a few months ago, but when I was 16, I had this pair of heels that I loved and I wore all the time, and they were kind of this like painted, like shiny plastic material. And I went into the class because it meant that I would get in. And in England, it was not very strict at that time. And they'd been like, yeah, sure, you're 18, fine. But I would spray paint them every week when we were going out a different color to kind of go with what I was wearing and to go with the ceiling, you know, my mood for that day. And like, I just remember that with this kind of like jolt of recognition, like, oh shit, I can do that now. Or like, that's still available to me, that kind of resourcefulness. And that creativity is so available to me, and even more so now because I have more resources to kind of play with. So whether it's dyeing, whether it's getting someone to alter your pieces for you, whether it's, you know, I haven't done any sewing because it makes me come out in hives all over my body, but, you know, I'm thinking about it and thinking about the option. Just like when I was 16, I didn't care. I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to do this. Like, I'm not buying a new pair of shoes. I'm just going to spray paint them gold.
And you don't even need to spray paint them these days because they have all these beautiful paints that are specifically made for painting leather.
I just bought some and they're iridescent and they're beautiful.
Oh my God.
Amazing boots that I have that I had. I'm going to fix this like amazing leather purse that I have that I've literally had in my drawer for like 6 years and it's just laying there because it's all worn. But I'm like, no, I'm going to buy the iridescent paint. I'm going to paint the shit out of you and you're going to look amazing.
Do it.
Most people, including me, feel like they can't, they don't have the thought to repurpose. And I'm wondering, what is the belief, what is the value that stops us from painting our shoes different colors? What is the story that we've been telling ourselves about why we can't do that or not even thinking of it as an option?
I really feel like it goes back to what you were saying when we recorded last time about not feeling like the expert. But it's like, you don't have to be an expert to pick up a can of spray paint. And I think it's just that just doing it and seeing, and like you were saying, allowing yourself to play, allowing yourself to make mistakes, because it, you know, if it was not going to be worn, if you weren't going to wear it anyway, it doesn't matter if it's not perfect or the way that you wanted it to be or the way that it might look if, you know, Nike made it or whatever. Like, if you do it yourself, then you're learning and you're progressing and you're evolving as well as evolving your wardrobe.
That whole idea around learning about what you like and learning to play with things, I feel like part of the reason that we don't do it as much as we should do it is that we've become conditioned to just outsourcing everything. And I don't know if maybe if you could speak to this a little bit, but even just everything on social media is all about buy, 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 get everything outside of yourself rather than taking the time to learn.
And I think it's almost like a double-edged sword because people feel so time poor. They don't have the time to learn. And so that promise of outsourcing and being highly productive, and it's this obsession with productivity, need to be able to do, be, have more, that stops us from pausing and thinking, could I try this myself? Could I play with this myself? Could I experiment with this myself? We'd probably go, oh, I just don't have the time and I really need that. So it's almost like everything gets spun into a time scarcity mindset and needing to be productive.
And also needing to be perfect. Needing to be perfect because we don't have the time to get it wrong. Like, I think we have time if we're going to nail it, but we don't have time to get it wrong. But we can't ever learn if we're already nailing it. Like, it doesn't matter. I think the time to play is the learning.
So even when we buy that piece of clothing, or perhaps we do play and we try something, we swing back into the, it's not good enough, it's not perfect enough. Oh, I painted my shoes and they look like shit. We sort of don't, I think people are starting to see this now and wanting to learn how to be over in the process. And I guess that's the other thing, is that it's like we're wishing away time. We just want to be at that point. We just want to be at that point where we can perfectly restore our shoes. We don't think about how will I enjoy this process of mending my sweater or painting my shoes and giving myself a bit of space. Like we really have lost touch with enjoying process. It's all about arriving at the point that we want to be at. And that to me is also that productivity piece too.
It is. And it also speaks to why people can't slow down to find their personal style, because they don't give themselves that time to, like we were saying, enjoy what they're wearing and kind of focus on why it is they are enjoying what they're wearing or why they aren't enjoying what they're wearing. It's like,
and be messy. And it's this kind of, it's the obsession with the linear, isn't it? It's like, okay, so I'm going to decide that I'm going to find my personal style. Then we're like, and so that should be like 1, 2, 3, boom, there I am, up the line. I've arrived at my personal style. But what we know is that things emerging is like the squiggly, weird, not the linear line.
Yeah.
And it's an evolution, we don't as well. Know how to, we don't know how to, exactly, the joy of the evolution, of the emerging, of the experimenting, of the play, and sort of somehow allowing ourselves to have an outcome that we would like, which is to create a personal style or find our personal style, but not controlling the process and the emergence and strangling the personal style in the process.
And I mean, I can really relate to what you're saying, because I feel like now sometimes I'm telling myself this story that I always have to look amazing, and that if I go and see my friend and I'm not looking like 100% stunning and my outfit isn't like the best, then I've failed in what I'm doing, which is absolutely not the case. And every time I notice that happening, I have to bring myself back down to earth and be like, Hazel, you are human. You can wear whatever you want for the way that you are feeling in this day. And it doesn't matter if you don't look as, like, quote unquote, good as you did last time you saw these people, or quote unquote, good as you did last time you posted your outfit on Instagram. It's like, I'm still just trying to dress up who I am, and we are changes on a daily basis in terms of me.
Exactly. And the other thing that made me think of, Hazel, was, and it's only because a couple of times this week, my eldest daughter, I've put something on and my daughter said, can I have that when I'm older? And I've thought to myself, wow, there's really very little that has been passed down from my mum or my grandma to me other than jewellery. And it's I was like, imagine if we're able to care and relate with these heroine pieces, and I love that you call them the heroine pieces, how story and sense of being part of that intergenerational connection and storytelling and relationship, how that could be woven in to why we take care of our clothes.
Absolutely. And it used to be such a part of normal society, and it's only in the last 15 or so years that it's become, and probably less really, maybe the last 25 years, that it's not so much the norm, as we have moved away from post-war era, I guess it's history, Australia, but from a UK perspective. And I still had a dress that my grandma made for herself, and she made it, and I wear it now to my events. I wear it to give my workshops and my talks, because it illustrates that exact thing. It's like, this is a piece of clothing that was handmade by someone that I love. And because of genetics, it fits me perfectly. And I get to stand here and talk to you about how we can reuse our clothes, how we can get the most out of our wardrobes, how we can really become more sustainable in our fashion choices, wearing something that has the history of my family and the history of the clothing that we have worn.
And so that is that beautiful reciprocity of the relationship with that piece of clothing. It's not only something that you can wear, but it's something that brings the spirit and the soul of these generations of women that came before you. It connects you to your ancestry. So you're part of that bigger worldview, that bigger picture, and you're thinking not behind, just behind you, not just in the present, but in front of you as well. And that's what's needed, right, for climate change, for taking care of the earth and the world and other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it always gets such a big reaction from the people that I'm speaking to, because they're seeing what I'm talking about in motion. Okay, I get it. Like, yes, I'm in, kind of thing. So it's such a powerful piece in regards to the story of what I'm trying to help people understand.
And it just so speaks to the longing for that connection to something other than ourselves, to something bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine if we could flip it from being like, so we want to be a part of something bigger, and so we all try and dress the same, we all try and get on these trends. But imagine if we can switch that fact of being about relationship, being about family, being about heritage, being about care and love for where we come from and where our future generations are going to go.
A huge thank you to our panelists for their insights and expertise around our topic of women, fashion and consumerism. If you'd like to connect with Viv, Hazel, Jacinta or Charlie, you can find their links in the show notes. I hope their advice has inspired you to rethink your consumption habits, embrace your unique style and make more sustainable fashion choices. Remember, fashion is not just about what we wear, but how we express ourselves and connect with our values. If you've enjoyed this series, leave a review and share it with your friends. Until next time, keep re-loving your wardrobe. Thanks for listening to Re-Loved Radio. You can find the show notes from today's episode on the website www.relovedradio.com.au. And that's also where you can download my hand-picked list of places to shop secondhand online in Australia. It features over 85 of the best online op shops, charity stores, vintage specialists, secondhand retailers, pre-loved luxury and designer fashion, ex-rental sales, and more. And it's free to download.